Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 15, Dignity. It might look as though Daniel's lost it all, his money, his home, his family, but there's one thing nobody can take away from him. Being Superman stars Daniel French as Michael and was written and produced by Tasman Pinder.
Yeah, Mindy, I get that these are tough times and all. I'm the last person you need to talk to about that, remember? What do you mean you're sorry? You told me I was a shoe-in for that detergent commercial. Those were your exact words. I went there and I poured my heart out in that audition. Honestly, I gave them everything I got. I just don't understand. I mean, they were looking for Superman, right? I literally live and breathe Superman. That's all I have left. This stupid suit. And forget about integrity. You can forget about. To be honest, it's... How long's it been? 5 months. 5 months since my last gig, Mindy. I'd do anything at this stage. But there's nothing. Nothing. I look out of the window, and we're all out there, starving on the street corners, begging people for a few nickels. It's disgusting. I thought the world would always need superheroes, but maybe society's just too sad, and we're all too sick to be cured. You know what? It wasn't always like that. I felt different before. The day they towed my car, my 1964 Plymouth Barracuda. The day my home was foreclosed and all I ended up with was my memorabilia and my baseball cards and a lockup off Sunset Strip. I thought back then, hey, I'm a good-looking guy. I got good hair, good teeth. People always say how much I look like Christopher Reeve. So, what have I got to lose? I put on that red and blue Lycra bodysuit. I strolled down Hollywood Boulevard. People looked at me like I was somebody, and I felt that I mattered. I was Superman. So maybe the money isn't all that important because that's something you can lose. It's all over in the roll of a dice. Fortune, it comes and goes. Being a good person, though, making people smile when they walk past you, posing for photographs with pretty girls, you just can't put a price on that. It makes me feel proud to be an American. And even though this country, this stinking country, has taken my job, my home, my family, even the clothes on my back, I'm still here. Drinking a coffee, smoking a cigarette, and when I'm out there, walking down the street, my red cape billowing out in the wind, there I am, standing tall and proud. That's tenacity for you. I'm strong, I'm powerful, and I don't need anyone's approval. Because at the end of the day, you go back to your shitty condo and you curl up and settle down for the night with a novel in front of the TV. But me, I get to do something more special. I get to go back to being Superman.
Stan Lee has a few tips on how to make it through life. Stan Lee stars Luke Thomas and was written by Tracy Haywood.
When I was a child, I was so fucking stupid. An absolute idiot. And you want to know why I was an idiot? I was needy. If there is one thing you can do in life to make you miserable, it's to be needy. I learned, though. I learned there was a better way. When I was very young, I was always bothering my mother and father with demands. Mother, watch me. Father, read to me. When, of course, they had absolutely no interest in doing. I mean, who would? My parents were very intelligent people. Very, very intelligent. My mother had the opportunity to audition for the Philharmonic Orchestra. And I destroyed it. Do you know how I did that? I arrived 3 weeks early. My mother was driving to her audition and I caused her waters to break. Now, this is something she had been practicing for hours a day for the last few months. Well, technically she had been practicing for it since she was 12. And she had to turn the car around on the way to the audition and drive to the hospital to give birth to me. This was, of course, in the days before mobile phones, and by the time she got to a payphone, her place had already been filled. So when I wanted to talk to her about some sort of caterpillar or my imaginary friend, in her mind, she was on the stage. And every year, on the anniversary of what would have been her big audition, she used to recount that story to me in great detail, and we would all sit and listen to her play her audition piece. Tchaikovsky, Violin Concerto. And my father? He was a magnificent biologist, incredibly prominent in his field. He won a number of prestigious awards. His days were full of discourse with geniuses, so of course he wasn't interested in reading me Beatrix Potter. His brilliant mind was full of saving the world. Do you have any idea what the future of global warming means for this planet? He used to ask me, if I tried to tell him about Sports Day. It was when I was 8 years old that I understood what the source of power is, and it's quite remarkable, actually. So many people can do it, but don't. My parents always thought everything, including presents, had to have a good reason for being in the house. And they were very astute, so were quite clear on what did and didn't need to be in the house. But on my 8th birthday, my mother's sister, Carolyn, bought me a Manchester United branded football. This football was a complete one-off for me to have because it didn't technically have a purpose. It was just, well, something of me, I suppose. Then, one afternoon, while playing kick-ups by myself in the street, a group of larger boys took the ball from me and watched in absolute joy as I ran around in total distress, trying and failing to take it from them. Then, when they'd had their fun, they kicked it over the fence of an abandoned home and all turned round at exactly the same time to look at me. Lips curled into a smirk, eyes wide with anticipation. There was this excitement buzzing around them all, focused on me. And in the moment, I got it. And so I looked the biggest boy in the eye and said, "You have it then. Bit of rubbish." And I sauntered off laughing. And that moment defined my life. And I want to share with you what I learned. I think you'll find it really rather helpful. So after that moment, my life became about avoiding situations where I give away power and looking for situations to take power from other people. For example, at the school talent show that year, I of course believed that giving someone else the opportunity to tell you who you are was an absolute ridiculous thing to do. So I did not audition. But I did take the opportunity to watch. And a young girl called Annabelle came up on stage trembling and launched into the most sincere version of Over the Rainbow I have ever seen. She had her eyes closed, she was swaying, very much in the moment, as they say. And she was good too. Not properly good, but child good. And after rehearsals, I tracked Annabelle down on her own in the corridor and said in a very sincere voice, "Annabelle, I hope you're all right." And she asked why. And I explained, "Well, when you sang your song today, everybody was laughing at you. They're all pointing at you like, who's that idiot?" They weren't. Not as far as I noticed, but what I was beginning to realise was that it didn't really matter. I watched her shrink in front of me. And I went on. "Oh, it was so embarrassing. I felt really bad for you. I hope you're okay." And that was it. She got offered a part in the talent show, turned it down. I did that. You see? Power. Stick with me and I will explain to you how the world works. Take last year's Christmas party, for example. Sandy is dancing to George Michael with this man who she's had a crush on all year. Apparently, timid little Sandy has finally worked up the courage to ask him to dance. How exciting. So I point at her and loudly shout out, "Hey, look at Sandy on the dance floor, waving her arms around. She looks like a Teletubby." I don't even know what that means, but you don't have to be clever to be cruel. And what you will find in a social situation like this, which I've always found quite fascinating, is it's easier for people to be passive than to be active. So the group I've chosen to be part of my mockery of Sandy, they just go along with it, without really thinking. And I do a few absurd impressions of Sandy's supposedly funny dancing, and pretty soon she's off the dance floor, covering up her cocktail dress with her cardigan, looking deflated and confused. Who knows what leaps and bounds Sandy's confidence could have taken after that night, if it wasn't for little old me. Give me an ounce of genuine enthusiasm and I can extinguish it in an instant. It really is quite the skill. Always better with an audience, I find. Sort of reinforces your point, even if no one is actually agreeing with you. Say someone comes into work one morning and announces, "Since I've been getting up early and running into work, I've had so much more energy." And you can say, "Oh, that's the worst thing you can possibly do for your joints, running. Sorry, as you're now the athlete, I thought you should know." Nudge the person next to you and laugh. And if you're lucky, you'll get a little laugh out of them too. This woman, Jean, in the office, made the mistake of telling me about how she'd built up the courage to join this amateur dramatics group and was going on about camaraderie and self-expression. And I interrupted her and asked, "How many people tend to come to these shows?" And she said about 40 to 50, and I winced and said, "Sorry, if you've only got 15 or so people in the group and everyone invites one or two people from their friends and family, it means that everyone in the audience is there out of obligation. I couldn't think of anything more pointless myself than performing to an audience you've all grouped together as hostages. I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but it seems to me if everyone is there because of some sort of favour, you may as well try and be a proper actress with a proper audience or give up on it entirely." And then I smiled at her to show that I was being friendly. And she shrinks in front of me. A month later, I asked her how the Amdram stuff was going, and she said she'd quit. She didn't know why, but she'd lost interest in it. I know why. It was me. I did that. And now my parents are slower and less mobile. I get to take the power back from them. My mother, for example, she now likes to reminisce to me in a way in which she never did when she was younger. There's something needy about wanting to reminisce. A need to be heard. And where there is a need, there is power. So when my mother begins to tell me about when the Queen came to visit Oxford University and heard my mother's quartet play, and when they had finished playing, the Queen described it as magical, at which point I interrupt and I say, "Mother, she has to be nice to everyone. She was probably bored out of her skull." Then she deflates, like a little grey balloon. It's quite the drive to go and see her now, you know. But it's worth it. Just for that. Power. Trust me. It's yours for the taking if you know where to look for it.